Hi, I'm Chloe Biru. Welcome to the Chats by Chloe. For more than 10 years, the Chloe platform brings inspiring stories about people and travel on different channels, newsletters, the Chloe magazine, and this podcast. Access our Instagram at ByChloe and subscribe for free. Ah, and follow me on my Instagram account at Chloe Ribeiro.
The media confirmed that she's part of the mafia. The Spanish mafia, with chocolinos and gangsters wearing the trendiest jackets ever. Jackets, shoes, bags. She was one of the first bloggers out there. And with no BS, she's a hard worker, covered with style. She's extremely funny. We had a blast at my wedding. Join me for this fun talk with Gala Gonzalez. Gala, querida, thanks for coming for our podcast here. Now it's by Chloe. It's Lifestyle Lovers by Chloe. Thanks for coming.
Muito obrigada. I'm very happy to be here. And it's always good to see you, of course.
Good to see you too.
It's good. It's difficult to make time in this city, for sure.
Yeah. And we were talking like how it's going to be for us to fit like so many questions in 25 minutes of interview with this amazing person.
We might need part two, maybe.
Yeah.
Or a long coffee.
But let's start talking about your book.
It came out in the market around springtime, mm-hmm. which is like April. Mm-hmm. And even now it's only been published in Spanish because at the beginning I thought about writing in English and then I thought, why would I do that if I'm Spanish? And, you know, sometimes you have to remember to actually embrace mm-hmm. more of who you are. Mm-hmm. And if I am writing a book, I should do it in my own language, you know, because... Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
That's where I'm coming from. And I think I'm proud to say that Spanish is the most spoken language in the world, you know.
Yeah.
So, and the feedback has been great so far. It's always difficult when you write something, especially when you're not a writer as such, because you don't know how people are going to react. That was the biggest fear. And then...
But how was the process of writing it?
The process was kind of like long because at the beginning... obviously, when you're not a professional writer, you will find the help of someone who is, who mm-hmm. can guide you through the process, who can help you organize your ideas mm-hmm. and so. But in my case, I didn't really enjoy it as much. And it comes to realizing three months before the launch of the book that the product that I was, you know, that I had in that moment, it wasn't exactly how I wanted to say, tell my story. So I told the editorial, I said, listen, let me do it completely on my own. Mm-hmm. I might screw it completely or I might produce something really good. I don't know, but that was part of the gamble. And so they were, okay, you know, it needs to feel 100% you.
Yeah.
And that's where it came out. Of course, it's written in a way where I want to be able for people to read it from people who have no clue what an influencer is, that it could be someone from, you know, an older age or... But it's also been written for people who actually want to get involved in this business. Mm-hmm. I want to tell my story on what my experience have been so far mm-hmm. within the industry. This is not an autobiography mm-hmm. because I'm still too young to even, you know, there's too many things that I think that need to happen in my life.
But you've been through a lot.
Yeah, and then I think I didn't want it to be focused in a personal way. Like, this is not me telling you all the gossip. You know, I'm not going to be sharing who I've been sleeping with because this is still the best kept secret. But I did want it to learn to share everything that I've learned so far in the last 10 years. Now that this is a proper profession, you know, mm-hmm. this is a job. It's the most requested job by younger generations. And then most of them, they think they don't really understand it as a job. They just want to be popular. They just want to be famous. And they don't understand that it's a huge sacrifice that most likely when you actually become successful, you're going to hate every minute out of it.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's the price that you have to pay.
And how, like, did you divide all of the parts of the book? How the subjects are divided here?
We wanted to do it chronologically. Mm-hmm. So people will also get a feeling from when it started and how did I got here. Actually, the first page starts here in New York. But I wanted the reader to understand from when I started, like, how did it end up living in New York today? You know, how can I afford to be here and doing it all on my own? I didn't have help from my parents. I didn't have help from anyone. Most of the times I was the breadwinner of my relationships, which is something that I haven't really talked about. And if kind of like distract, you know, deconstructing the whole myth of just achieving success. Yeah, it was like, I was the one doing everything and I'm still here doing everything on my own. So it puts the person in perspective going through 10 years of how did I get here today.
But you started like in early 2000s, right? 2005?
2007, 6, 7, yeah.
And how did you start it? Like you were just posting on the blog and how was the process to start everything? How?
For those who remember probably, because we are very old. Old in terms of internet.
I just remember that you were everywhere since I was a teenager, but we are the same age.
Okay, but for those on the internet time, you know, for the internet era, age, we are dinosaurs pretty much. Yeah. Because if you're not 13, you're old for the business. But I started with a platform called Photolog, which is actually quite popular in Brazil. And Spain and Europe and all the Latin American countries. And it was a platform where you could share one image per day. And I was just like, that was before Facebook. So I was just posting one image. That was my first time when I went to university. I used it as a way to be in touch with my friends from school. And people just started to comment on my outfits more than actually on the image itself. And then my friends started saying like, oh, all my little, you know, sisters, they follow you and then they think you're really cool. And then I was like, me? They follow me? For what exactly? I didn't quite understand what I was doing or if I was doing anything right.
And the expression was like following.
Following, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. That was before likes and everything, yeah. I guess. So at the time, I think I saw a bunch of blogs like The Sartorialist and Fashion Toast. They weren't even blogs as such. They were more like communities because Rumi, for example, she had an online vintage online store on eBay. Mm-hmm. And she used the blog to actually help promote the eBay shop. And then I looked at it and then I thought, why don't I do like a blog just focus on my looks rather than my normal life? And that's how the blog started. Just one thing led to another. And then after a while, after a bunch of years, Twitter started as well, and then Instagram appeared. And with that, there was other ways to make money out of this. And, you know, one instrument complemented the other one. You know, one social media was like the other one supporting each other. And I think even though people now, they believe blogs are not as popular, I still see it because of the jobs that I do with my clients, that they still want to publish on blogs or on bigger platforms. Because when you do Google search for Google positioning for a brand, it's very important to have atemporal content that they can check. While on Instagram, it goes and you can never retrieve it.
Yeah.
So I think they're still alive because of that.
But then after, like, then for Instagram, how do you plan everything regarding, as you said, your clients? Because I don't see you just like the digital influencer. I see you as like as a company. You're kind of like an institution because you have like all of these big, big, big brands with you. And you're like hosting dinners. You were with Elton John 2 nights ago. Like it's major. So you have, for the listeners that doesn't know like the name for it, agent, publicist, like you have an agent and you have the 8 different agents all over the world. How does it work for the brands to approach you, or how do you select what kind of jobs you're going to take? How is the process of like the company gala?
Professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, like how you... When is the moment that you turn into your hobby into a profession?
Exactly.
I think that's the moment that you realize that you cannot do it everything on your own. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's human and physically impossible.
But for many years you did, and like you're the one that's choosing things at the end of the day.
I mean, and I do believe, and I still know a lot of girls who do it on their own completely, but I think if you want to grow in the right way, you need to understand that your brain can go to a different speed than your body does. Mm-hmm. So if you burn out because you're overworking, one day you want to wake up and your body's going to say, stop, I can't do this anymore. And also, so you need to look after yourself. And also, I think the moment that you learn to rely on a team and work on a team for the same goal, and, you know, you set up yourself in a way that, you know where you're going. You no longer are just taking jobs for the sake of taking jobs and making money, but you're setting different goal achievements per year or in your life that you want to go to, and then you need help. So it's important to find people that they can support you that way. And it's important as well to learn to trust, which is the most difficult thing that we have, because we've created a job that it relies completely on us. Nobody else can do it. At the end of the day, you're the image. So if you don't do things right, or if someone else don't do them right for you, you're the one to blame. So it's very difficult. You know it well as well. You know, it's important to find people that you can trust, that you feel comfortable with. And also, not even just in your own country, but when you move globally, when you targeting jobs or you're working with companies that they're based in different countries, you need to learn how the whole industry works. So
I bet it's different for each country. They have
policies. And what works for you doesn't have to work for me.
Yeah.
And this is something that I always tell people, is like, if you're not happy with an agent, doesn't mean that it could be a good agent for me. You know, you just need to find what it suits for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the key in all of this is not to compare yourself to others.
Yeah. But like before, let's talk about before the agents. When did you realize that it was not a hobby and it was a business? How was the first proposal from a brand to say, I want to be a partner, pay you to post? Like how was this approach?
Well, it started slow. I think around 2010, I was getting my first job offerings in a regular basis. Before, the previous year had been like one and off. Some months I will work a lot, other months I wouldn't work at all. Mm-hmm. So I never know if I was going to have money to pay the rent or not, you know. But after a while in 2010, I kind of like felt my clients became to be more stable. Like I was getting requests.
And you were living where?
In London.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I realized, well, if they're, you know, going for me, if I am their choice, is that I'm doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to become more professional. I need to keep educating myself. I need to keep, you know, not just in terms of fashion, but I need to learn about marketing. I need to learn about economics because they're going to affect me. I need to learn how to do my tax because I'm a, you know, an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like it or not.
Yeah.
So none of us, we study that. We didn't go to university to study economics. I studied fashion design. So it's a job that implies to get to know a lot of different fields.
Mm.
So,
But then, how was the first approach from a brand? Do you remember?
I think the first proper approach, it was with Loewe, which is a Spanish brand that is now very popular.
Yeah.
And back in 2010, they changed the designer, and it was the designer who was coming from Mulberry.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Stuart Beavers. I know he's the current creative director for Coach. And he just chose me to do one of their campaigns. And it was that moment that I was like, this is not anymore a little job. This is not just me doing a promo of a t-shirt or a promo of a coat or an
I'm getting these beautiful boxes in my apartment.
I'm going to be doing a campaign with Cady Grant, with all these, you know, huge people. And I'm no one. And I remember arriving there and I was 23. And I was scared to death because it dressed me like Shakira and I had all this big hair and this shirt and I felt so out of place. And I was thinking, well, I'm the only one who looks like Shakira. I don't want to be the Latina. You know, I was a bit pissed off, to be honest. I was a bit angry because being in London, being Spanish, I always was, you know, I had to accept that I was the Spaniard and I hated to have a label. You know, I didn't want, but with my surname Gonzalez, there was little I could do.
Yeah.
Apart from accepting that I am from Spain and that's fine. So when I was kind of portrayed as the Latina, the sexy woman, like the Sofia Vergara of the shooting, I was like, not again. but I think it was funny as well. It's, I always think about it and I think, you know what? I will never have the amazing body that I had back then. So it was great to be Shakira for a day and to embrace it. And after that, I think other brands started to take me more serious, for sure. Once you start to work with bigger brands and they see and they trust in you, I think other doors are opened. I'm not saying that the bigger brands are the ones that they're going to give you the best deals. I'm saying that they give you a respect within the industry and, you know, they position you in a completely different way.
Yeah. And like, I bet that you've been to amazing places during all of this journey with amazing brands like inviting you for events and etc. Let's go deep on that. And like, what was the moment
that you had something like very, very special. Maybe you have like, probably you have more than one moment, but that was very special during your career, that you were like an event or a gala, that it was like, wow, this is...
Wow. One of the...
That it was very glamorous, that's what I want to
say. Okay. A moment that you feel like I'm here.
Yeah, this is so chic. Oh, this is so chic.
I think it has to be every single time when I go to Cannes Film Festival, and I've been there with many different brands, and so I had my experience have changed, you know. Every single time that I go, it's a completely different experience. When I'm on the red carpet, I always think, like, what am I doing on this red carpet? Because before it was something that it was only for actresses. Mm-hmm. And actors and people who work within the cinema. But now we live in a global world where it's about exposure, it's about all getting involved and making people aware of the things that we are producing, mm-hmm. in terms of cinema, fashion, everything, yeah. that we consume. So it still feels really special. And I'm very aware of how many people would love to be experiencing that moment. But at the same time, I would love to share what it feels like, because it is more than anything terrifying. You're there, and it's very scary. Those 5 minutes that
but
it lasts,
still?
It's still, I will have a vodka before I go on the red carpet.
But you're not aware that you're like one of the biggest digital influencers in the world now.
But
like,
I think it doesn't matter. When you're there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but are you aware?
I don't think I am aware, because I think I don't ever compare myself to others, like in terms of career-wise.
Yeah, but it's like not even comparing. It's about like... It's been so long that you're there, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And like, let's talk about the details. You're always partnering with very, like, not, I'm not even talking about a cheap or expensive brand, but like high-end brands and established brands, right? And then it's been so many years. So for me, this is the kind of thing that we can say, yeah, she's like... the premium class of digital influencers. So it's not even comparing, but it's like, for me, you're established already, like,
yeah,
regarding your image and like for the what we call the company itself, you know?
It is established for sure. I think I also feel very comfortable in the position that I've, you know, managed to get through the work of all these years. But even that it's established, nothing is really established. Like, you still have to work very hard to keep it on that way. And for me, it's strange to see how now there are, like, levels, as you were describing. The moment you start being an influencer to the moment that you make it, what it is actually to make it in this industry.
Yeah.
Because I see other girls that they might not be working with brands that I work, but they're very established as well, and they found their niche. I think once you find how you want to be portrayed, that's valid, whatever it is, how you want to position yourself. It just depends that if you work in fashion, it is a bit more difficult, because it can be sometimes a tough industry to work with. But it's I was saying to compare it to each other before, because I always say that the race for me is within myself. So when I set up goals or achievements, they're always for me to reach, not for anyone else to reach. I don't care. So they're so unreachable that I'm always frustrated, because I'm never going to get what I want because they always grow. But I think that happens to everybody. Or I used to think that, until I realized that it doesn't. A lot of people spend more time and more energy comparing their achievements to other people's achievements rather than focusing on themselves. And I think that's the key in order to maintain yourself there.
But how can, like, with Instagram, how can you not, like, only if you don't check Instagram? Because, like,
I was listening to a podcast about it today, actually, about the generation, the millennial generation, our generation, how we are so, you know, vulnerable to everything that happens around us constantly. We are constantly looking for approval.
No, I was thinking, for example, when I was still school, no one would know if I was going to my parents' private jet. We don't have that, but like, no one knew. And today, all of these kids at school, they know what they're doing. They're mean. We were mean when we were kids. So like, I think about like how it's to be like raising kids now. It must be very hard, because you need
it is
to
very hard.
You need to control.
Because kids now, they think they can have everything. Yeah. And they expect to have everything because there's no effort involved before. Well, we had to sit on a conversation and you have to make an effort to become friends with other people. We no longer have to do that. You know, you just pull out your phone and you can befriend someone on Facebook or you can befriend someone on Instagram. You don't even have to make an effort to take someone on a date. You can swipe right. And immediately you establish a connection where he agrees that likes you and probably it's going to be like a physical exchange of sex. And it's easy as that. So there's no longer any effort to put onto something. There's no patience to wait for things to happen. People want what they want and they want it right now. And if you cannot have it delivered to your home, you no longer want it. You know, you have Postmates, you have Uber, everything. Yeah. So that's kind of destroyed the way we communicate. And it's a bit scary. I mean, I'm happy as well, like you, that we grew up analogic and then we transitioned to the digital world. But if you look at younger generations, I think it's very difficult because I think they always feel, they don't feel fulfilled completely.
Yeah.
It's like this, they never feel happy 100% because they always want to want more and more. And because I don't think they really know what they want anymore.
Yeah, so let's destroy a lot of dreams for kids now that are listening to us. Let's talk about your real life. No, let's talk about your real life because, for example, October, you could be everywhere for the fashion month, but I don't know how you had energy to do everything that you were doing. It was work nonstop.
Some months, yeah, for sure. There's certain months.
But like you were for the summer, you were everywhere.
Since August, yeah. Starts in August, finishes like late October. It's like it's a commitment that you make, you know. You can always say no. You can say, this is how much I'm going to be doing. The problem is sometimes it's easy to end up feeling like the little hamster instead of the wheel. Because it's easy to say yes. You know, who's going to say, like, do you want to do this job or not? Well, don't worry. Someone is going to do it for you.
Yeah.
So a lot of people get that in the back of the head.
Yeah.
But also you need to understand where the opportunities lie. Sometimes you want to do things because you really want to do them. You really want to work with that person, regardless if it's like money or not involved.
Yeah.
Something that you feel that you want to do. Yeah. And this is what's been happening in the last past of months, that I became addicted to things that I wanted to do just because I generally wanted to do those jobs. But all of a sudden, I took a step back and then I realized, wait a second, I need to go on holidays.
I remember that it was a day like I was checking Instagram and I was thinking like, I think that Gala, she has like people sending her outfits when she arrives at the destination because it's impossible to travel. Like you were in so many different countries. I think in 1 week, it was like hot weather to something like colder. Like, and you had every, like,
there is people sending
outfits. It's not like me when I'm traveling because I just have a white t-shirt.
That's why you need a team to be working with you, because
crazy.
If you arrive and you still have to send all the emails, you need to look good on top of that. You know, it's not that you step off the plane and you can look like shit because you can be behind a camera. You're in front of the camera. You're expected to be happy and everything is like perfect. Yeah. And not every day you feel perfect, to be honest. And that's when I realized that getting old is very expensive because I spent most of my time in bed, you know, taking all the sleep that I didn't have and spending all my money in the dermatologist, pretty much, because that's where I go to for the sunspots, for the tired face, like the vitamins, the facials, like everything. Your body starts to crack up because your body cannot follow what your brain goes through, you know, the speed.
Yeah. But how do you organize? Like, I'm not even talking about packing. I'm talking about, like, how can you organize all of the meetings, the shootings? Like, it's all of your agents all over the world. You organize, you don't sleep. Like,
I don't sleep. No, I do sleep.
Almost.
Yeah, because I wake up really early.
Yeah.
Like at 7 I'm on because I have to be tuned with Europe, which are always 6 hours ahead.
Oh.
But now for that, I have an assistant. She is based in Madrid. So she is, I would say, like, you're me, but in Europe. So she can feed me with everything that's been going on.
Great.
So it's very important to work on a team. You know, like I always tell people, I don't mind what you do in your free time. But when we're working. And I have my team in Europe and my team in America. And we always try to make things work. But it is planned ahead for sure, like a couple of months ahead.
Oh.
So when people ask me, hey, can you come to Miami next month? It's like, I don't know. This is always last minute. We always have to fill in the gaps that you have in between.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be quite exhausting at times. At the beginning, when you start traveling, you think it's fun because you get to see the world, of course. And I've been to amazing places that, you know, I loved and I will never take that experience back. But they all, you don't actually spend as much time as you would like to. It's not when you go on holidays. You're there for work.
Yeah.
And it is quite exhausting traveling. I think flying is probably our worst enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Spending all that much time inside of a plane. But the good news is that you get to learn a lot about your skin and how to make it look better.
And so why New York?
I came to New York.
Yeah, well, so when did you move?
I've been 2015.
Okay.
Officially. But I've been coming to New York for many years, since 2009. Mm. Probably that was the wildest fashion week I've ever experienced in my whole life, when fashion was cool properly. And after that, I kept on coming, you know, obviously for fashion week, for jobs. But I never really gave New York a chance. New York was that thing, it was like, oh, it's just like, I don't know. I didn't feel I was connecting with America, to be honest. I'm going to be completely honest. I wasn't attracted to North America as the country that it could give me what I craved. I thought I was too European.
What is the difference for you regarding, like,
no, New York is not a difference.
To be too European, I'm Brazilian, so I don't know what's to be European.
Europeans were full of bullshit, and we are snobbish. We think we're the best. We always fight within each other. You know, like the French loves to hate the Spanish, and the Brits love to hate the French. It's like all this is stupid bullshit within countries. But when we're outside Europe, we all love each other. That's the crazy thing about it. But New York, it's a place that is not, New York is not North America. New York has nothing to do with anywhere else. It's a city like no one else. And also, I got to love and fall in love with North America and North Americans. I felt it's a country that it is what it is. It's the American dream. It's the place where I no longer had to be from anywhere. They didn't care if I had an accent. They didn't care where I came from. They only care I was coming here to work, and that's what I wanted to do. They gave me a voice. They gave me a space. I felt so welcome. I felt so accepted. I felt I had so much room for improvement where I wasn't achieving back in Europe. I felt there was a hand given to me, you know, like they were like, we're going to make you do whatever you want if you really want it. This is the place to do it. So for me, it was a complete liberating process. Coming to New York was like the best thing ever happened to me. And I always tell people, if you feel you're craving for something more in life, come to New York, because this is probably the place where you're going to, you know, make things happen. You're going to find who you are. And you need, and for that, you need to be on your own. That was the best thing.
Oh, yeah.
So when I moved, I was alone. I was single and experienced New York to the fullest with everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
Which is addictive, you know, as you know, probably. Sometimes I do miss a little bit. I had an amazing time. I had like 18 months of complete crazy freedom. I did everything that was written. I was a devil, and I'm reformed and I'm happy.
Oh, great. But then, like, for a normal day here for you, like, you wake up at 7, what do you do?
Around 7, I try to squeeze in a workout. Is this something I've been doing for the last 3 months? Mm-hmm. I think now I'm becoming a proper New Yorker. Mm-hmm. I go to Pilates, I go to bar, I do all these things. Maybe just like gravity, I don't want things to drop too much.
Ah.
I'm trying to pick them up before it's too late. It is. And I think also it's mentally important to the exercise.
Yeah, mentally too.
Traveling.
Yeah.
Like, and then I just do all my emails. I try. First thing,
do you have
actually.
Breakfast?
I have breakfast after a workout.
And do you have like Spanish breakfast?
No. My boyfriend, who is really into the heavy breakfast.
Yeah.
If I do that, I'm probably going to go back to sleep. So that's not a good idea. I do more of the lunch, like a banana and then a smoothie or like acai bowl or something like that. To be honest, one thing that I miss about not living in Europe is that I don't cook as much here.
Oh.
There's no time to cook.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, my kitchen doesn't inspire me to cook, to be honest. So this is the only downside, that I do a lot of Postmates.
When I moved here from Brazil, I felt like here, I'm not that connected. How can I say? I think that the connection that we have, I would say, with God, especially in Brazil, that we are very Catholic, it's very strong.
Yeah.
Like, are you Catholic? Like, you follow something, you're like...
I grew up Catholic, And I even did my confirmation. So when, you know, to nun school, like, it went through the whole thing. It was when I was 18 that I realized I didn't kind of believe in that part, even that... For my grandmother, that was a bit devastating.
Uh-huh.
She's
The grandmothers are
an old school.
Yeah,
I don't know. I felt with religion, I realize that all religions collide in the same ways, in the same spirit. And I think if you've been educated under those ideas, regardless if you're religious or not, mm-hmm. that's the important base. Like, mm-hmm. I remember when my granddad died, I was the only one who gave a speech at his funeral. Oh. And everybody else was, like, so touched. And, you know, like, they couldn't do it. And then yeah. I thought, so you think you're a better Christian than I am, but yeah. I'm doing it and I'm openly not a believer.
It's from my heart and, from my soul. It's not only, like,
exactly. So I feel like sometimes to believe or not, it's you can really show it in the moment that is the real time to mm-hmm. do it. And then for me, I feel I don't need to tell people that I believe or not because they think I'm doing things in the right way mm-hmm. because it's this. When I was brought up in a Catholic environment and I loved their experience. But I also relate to my friends who are Jewish or my friends that are Muslims. They all share the same things. I think as long as you don't take it too extremist,
yeah,
it's good, like anything. But I feel, I don't know, contrary to you, I don't think New York has brought me back to the most religious part. It's probably brought me to the less religious part of me.
Yeah.
Because I feel here.
You're so everything is so intense. You're like, and I don't like it. But
even things that have more soul.
Yeah.
I know New York is not that place.
No. So, talking again about New York, where are your favorite places here? Like your favorite hotspots to eat? I know that you love Café Mogador.
Yeah, I love Café Mogador for sure. I love everything that is a bit quirky. So probably Lower East Side, Chinatown, Soho, of course. I love it. But yeah, those are the Nolita and Noho. I would go shopping there. Like,
Café what about Gitan. Like restaurants? Yeah, Café Gitan.
Yeah, exactly. Where? I do more Postmates, as I said. I'm going
But where do you like to go?
Well,
in the Lower East Side, I love that place called Kiki's.
That Greek place
is amazing.
Yeah. And then there's also Pietro Nolita, which is very Instagram photogenic for those who want a good picture. There's a bunch of places that you can go to, but I think the beauty of New York is that every 3-4 months they're opening and closing things. So I think it's about exploring. Mm-hmm. Like also in Chinatown, you could end up in one of those restaurants that they're like on the second level mm-hmm. and they look not very welcoming because it looks like you're going instead of like someone's wedding.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing experience, you know? It's like so tacky and like with the cloths on the table, but I love it. It's an amazing experience. So I think the best thing about New York is that you could end up having food in an amazing place that doesn't look as nice from the outside.
Right. And talking about your career, now that we have like just a few minutes left, we have your book here. We will have the link for Amazon. They can buy on Amazon all over the world. And what's next?
Right now I'm launching my collection in the next, I would say a few weeks, fingers crossed, but it's probably a month or two maximum. So it's at the end of this year.
But when it's going to be?
Worldwide.
Oh, so it's going to be like a buy it on like online, on your website.
Yeah, so my website is relaunching. We're in the process of renewing everything. It's going to be
and what's the style?
It's
your style, but
it is.
Give me more details about it.
It's based on if you go now to my Instagram, @amlul, mm-hmm. you can see a bit of like a mood board inspiration of the color palettes, the type of women that I design for. I think I design for the modern women who consumes probably more resort clothing mm-hmm. because I came to realizing that most women, we spend a lot of money in good handbags, coats, accessories, you know, expensive accessories. But when it comes to clothes, we just want that dress that we can take on a Saturday night, but we also can take on holidays. So things need to be able to adjust to our needs.
Yeah.
So I took my inspiration, which is Lauren Hutton and Charlotte Rampling, two women that I'm obsessed with. And I kind of designed thinking, if I was one of them, what would I like to, you know, to wear? For me, they're all the real icon of the modern icons. You know, we still believe, you know, 40, 50 years after, you know, they made it big, I still look at them and I go, wow. So they're absolutely timeless.
Oh, I can't wait. Thanks for coming.
Thanks. Obrigada, muito obrigada.
De nada.
Prazer.
I'm Clau Ribeiro, and you just listened to the Chats by Clau. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our channel and receive the new ones right away. Oh, and please rate and review. Thank you, and I'll see you soon.